show is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Find out more and check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net. Well, our theme today is obstacles or launch pads. And we always have so many obstacles being thrown in our way with the pursuit to protect and defend and restore our constitutional rights, our Second Amendment rights. And we need people who are able to help us in that pursuit. And Dr. John Lott is just invaluable to us because he helps make sense out of so much of the nonsense that gets thrown around out there by the politicians, by the what used to be called the nightly news, and now is just a, oh my gosh, it's just a big gossip mill. But Dr. John Lott is the nation's preeminent expert on guns and the author of a number of books, including More Guns, Less Crime, and his latest, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. John's work gives those of us who are protecting our Second Amendment rights a solid foundation of research. Welcome to the show, Dr. John Lott.
Well, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's been way too long. I'm so excited to catch up with you again. So much has happened since the last time we talked, and you know, some of the biggest and most confusing news about our Second Amendment rights has been rooted in the comments being publicized from these high school students, and one in particular, this guy named David Hogg, speaking about the Parkland, Florida high school murders. What is he getting wrong, and do you think he really just doesn't understand, or do you think he's purposeful in the stuff that he's saying?
Well, I had the chance to talk to him, I guess about a week and a half ago.
Okay.
We talked for about 40 minutes on the phone, and you know, I just think he's obviously gone through a very emotional experience, and he is pretty much parroting what he's being told by, you know, every town and other groups like that. He's not a critical consumer of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's kind of a true believer. When we were talking, he would raise points. He'd say, well, like, the big question that he finally left us with at the end when we were talking was, you know, why is it that the United States is the only country that has all these mass public shootings, that you just don't see this at all in other countries?
How many times do you have to answer this question? You answer this over and over and over again, but go on.
And, well, I mean, it's the type of statement that obviously former President Obama made over and over again.
Yes.
And a lot of people believe it. And, you know, I sent him links with detailed information showing the high rate that these attacks occur in other places. But I never heard back again from him. So I don't know. I mean, at least on something like that and a couple other issues, I hope he knows what's correct on it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I haven't gotten any final feedback on whether he understands it or not. And there are other issues. You know, he makes pretty much the same types of normal comments that you see from others. Like, well, even, you know, Republican Senator like Rubio talking about armed teachers. You know, he would say, well, you know, what happens if a teacher stops an attack and then the police might show up and they shoot the teacher? Well, you know, my response to both Senator Rubio and David would be, we don't need to guess about these types of things. We have our website collected dozens of mass public shootings in recent years that have been stopped by people with concealed handgun permits, and the types of concerns that are raised about a police officer when they arrive on the scene shooting the permit holder, or you know, the permit holder accidentally shooting a bystander. Those are possible, but I just can't find any cases where that's occurred. And, you know, it'd make more sense to put a lot of weight on it if it was something that they could point to happening at least once or twice. But, you know,
But yet we have all these examples of what does happen and what has happened and what will keep happening. And all they've got is, well, what if this, you know, thing that's never happened before?
That's true for a lot of the gun control debate. I mean, I've seen it over and over again. I give people examples from when I work with airline pilots unions to help pilots be able to carry guns on planes. You know, I think very few people know the history of that program in the past. People just tend to assume whatever the current rules are, those are what the rules have always been. And so you just look to see the fact that from like 1923 through 1963, all commercial airline pilots were mandated to carry a loaded handgun with them whenever they flew. And from after that until 1979, they were given the option of being able to go and carry a loaded handgun with them. And so, you know, it's you have literally hundreds of millions of cases where you can look at and the types of concerns that are raised about pilots getting into an argument with each other in the cockpit and shooting each other or other things.
Right.
Just you can't find any examples of that occurring. You know, things like problems with teachers carrying is the same type of issue in the sense that, you know, we have now 20 states that have teachers and staff being able to carry, actually do have been approved by their local school districts as being able to carry. You know, Utah has had this for 21 years. And, of course, it's not just kind of the modern program where you see things adopted after the Federal Gun Free School Zone Act was passed. Kind of before that act came up, states that had right to carry just didn't even have regulations on these things, and you just don't see problems that occur. And so, you know, it's, I guess it's just kind of natural that people worry about what might go wrong. But, you know, part of that's just because of the news media. The news media is constantly focusing on bad things that might happen with guns,
And I
rarely giving discussions about the benefits. And I think it affects people's perceptions of the costs and benefits.
Absolutely. And I think they also are, I have to believe it's purposeful. Like there's something magical and evil about the tool itself. That, you know, taking it back to the pilots. So these men and women, they're logical, they're educated, they're all these things where they're able to take huge tubes into the sky filled with hundreds and thousands of people every single year. And they're perfectly fine. They're not going to purposely crash the plane because they're getting in an argument with each other. But now you introduce a firearm and suddenly they're going to be, you know, doing a duel. You know, or shoot out at the OK Corral up there in the cockpit in the air. Like, what? Where's that logic train? Like, I don't even understand how they formulate these thoughts and make them sound believable enough for anybody else to nod their head in agreement. It's complete madness. But we definitely have heard them, and you've definitely been trying to push back against them with true logic and truth and examples for years. But I want to switch gears for just a second, and I want to talk about a piece that you wrote in the National Review. So you were talking about, you know, some of these quote-unquote fact checkers, and it had to do with President Trump's speech at the NRA annual meeting. So can you kind of lean into that and take us into what that piece is all about?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess I've had a lot of problems with fact checkers over time on the gun issue. These people are no less liberal than the media is generally. Unfortunately, we face a real problem with regard to inaccuracies with these fact checkers because Facebook, social media are using fact checkers to determine whether certain types of news stories can be trending or not. And that's going to have a real impact, again, on people's perceptions about how things work. And so, you know, in the case of Trump, I mean, there have been a lot of things recently. Before the NRA National Convention, they were going after the NRA and Trump for somehow hypocrisy on whether or not they had gun-free zones or not when the president and vice president spoke. I mean, to me, that seemed like a pretty easy thing to explain, why you would have a different set of rules when the president would be speaking versus when he's not there. Because the rest of the convention, they had no problem with people carrying handguns. And it's, the distinction there is that when you're talking about a high-profile person like the president, in a target, you know, one bullet can make a difference there. The advantage of having permanent concealed carry people when you're talking about stopping mass public shooting is that speed to get somebody there to stop an attack is extremely important. And it, if somebody starts to shoot, you have a chance to go and respond. There may be no chance to go and respond. You may have no warning other than that first shot when you're trying to go and protect the president. And beyond that, unlike everybody else, the president and the vice president have a swarm of Secret Service agents who are already there, many of them already not uniform, protecting those individuals. So I don't know. That seemed like an easy call, but the media just would react and say, well, you know, hypocrisy by the president and the NRA. most recently, when the president was at the convention, he used some facts that the Crime Prevention Research Center had put together. One of the facts that he had used was that 98% of the mass public shootings since 1950 have occurred in places where general citizens are banned from having guns. Fact checkers were much more interested in taking a measure used by Michael Bloomberg's Everytown, Ravis, I guess, who would want to go and use things like residential shootings or gang shootings, or to try to explain to them that there is a difference between mass public shootings and mass shootings. That mass shootings are overwhelmingly involving gang-type attacks. Gang attacks are important, but the reason why the FBI has distinguished things that are quote public types of attacks versus all these is that when they're looking at the public ones, they're trying to get some type of information on the attacks that galvanize people, that these attacks at schools or malls or other places, where the sole point of doing the attack is to go and kill as many people as possible. And the point is pretty clear, I think, that you that the causes and solutions for gang fights over controlling drug turf are dramatically different than these other types of cases. You know, we can talk about legalizing drugs or trying to reduce profits for drug gangs, but that's not really relevant for these other types of mass public shootings. And then you had the issue of what is a gun-free zone. So, for example, you know, Bloomberg and the other definition there wants to go and say that, well, if police are allowed to carry in a place, that's quite distinct from, you know, civilians. Or they'd say it's not distinct. And I would say that there is a big distinction. Having somebody in uniform there to go and guard a place, having one police officer, is an incredibly difficult job. when these guys are going to attack. Very often, if there's one police officer who's armed there, he'll be the first person taken out. It's kind of like being there with a neon sign above you that says, shoot me first.
Right.
And
I'm the only one that's going to resist you, so duh. You know,
who
are you going to engage
out,
first?
Right. And so the advantage of having concealed carry is that you take away that strategic advantage from the killer there. I don't know. They may not want to acknowledge that. Unfortunately, the fact checkers don't want to either.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we got to run to a commercial real quick, but I'd like to ask you to stick around and go through another segment with us because I still have lots of questions. Do you have time?
Sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, stick around. We have more with Dr. John Lott, the author of a bunch of books, but the most recent one is The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Stick around.
Hey everybody, this is Joey Rocket Shoes Dillon, world champion gunslinger and Hollywood gun coach. In the Westerns, there's always a good guy and a bad guy, and sometimes the ugly guy. And I always root for the good guy, which is why I'm here to tell you about the good folks over at azfirearms.com. They are straight shooters and always give you the best deal in town. azfirearms.com is the biggest little gun shop in Arizona and have something for every single gun enthusiast. Long guns, pistols, hunting, military, law enforcement, home protection, you name it. And when you've got some guns to sell or trade in and trade up, azfirearms.com are the folks to see. Geez, they bought a cannon once. They are family-owned and operated, friendly staff, courteous, totally reliable. azfirearms.com will give you the best value for your used guns. So stop in, see my friends Dan and Cheryl Todd at azfirearms.com in Old Town Avondale off the I-10 and Dysart Road and tell them Joey Rocket Shoes Dillon sent you.
Don Collier here, letting you know that you won't get fool's gold at Pot of Gold Auction. They're the genuine article. Pot of Gold auctions off guns, coins, jewelry, and antiques of every kind. Stop in and see my friends Dan and Cheryl Todd in Avondale, Arizona for some live auction action. Or check them out on the web at potofgoldestate.com.
The Second Amendment Foundation is the organization that protects our right to keep and bear arms. They defend our rights in courts from coast to coast. Now they need our help. Go to saf.org and join the Second Amendment Foundation today.
Dedicated to promoting a better understanding of our constitutional heritage to privately own and possess firearms. Support those who support our Second Amendment rights today. That's saf.org.
Welcome back to Gun Freedom Radio, where we engage, we educate, and we inform. We are brought to you by azfirearms.com, your nationwide hometown gun shop. Well, we are talking with Dr. John Lott. Now, Dr. John Lott is, his work gives those of us who are protecting our Second Amendment rights a solid foundation of sound research, and he's the author of multiple books, two of which are More Guns, Less Crime, and his latest one, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. And I just want to preface all of that, Dr. Lott, by saying that, you know, you're not even necessarily a gun rights guy. You're a statistician, right?
Right. Well, I don't like to call myself a gun rights guy. One of my pet peeves is that when I debate gun control advocates, they're often referred to as individuals who want to, you know, violence prevention type. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to believe that's what motivated me in this discussion, but the media will often say, you know, such and such is a violence prevention advocate, and the person on the other side is a gun rights advocate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I like to believe that both, I know I'd like to believe at least myself is somebody who's trying to prevent violence. Mm-hmm. I would go and argue that the gun control advocates' claims are more likely to result in death and violence then, and, you know, I disagree with them. I don't think that they're doing it any more than the discussion we had at David Hogg earlier. You know, they're doing this to try to make sure people die. I just think that they're mistaken. I believe everybody's trying to do the same thing, though, and that is to try to figure out ways to save lives.
Yeah, so important. Those distinctions are so important. So, you know, before the break, we were talking about, you know, if you have, you know, armed, uniformed people in schools versus, you know, and here's a misnomer even. Are we arming teachers? I don't know about that. I think, why are we trying to disarm people who would normally carry, who happen to be teachers, like myself? I'm not a teacher, but I am a trained concealed carry firearms owner. So no matter what my day job is, that's just part of my wardrobe. That's part of who I am. That's part of how my brain works. And so if I happened to be a teacher, why would you force me to leave my firearm at home? I'm not going to change my behavior and, you know, kind of like the pilots in the air we were talking about. Suddenly I'm going to now, you know, enact a duel with another teacher or, you know, something like that just because I've crossed that imaginary line from the rest of my life onto a high school campus or a college campus or whatever. But we're right. When we look at... Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't... It's an interesting discussion because we have about 17 million Americans that carry concealed handguns in the country that we know have licenses. And, of course, now we're, you know, like 14 states, depending on how you count it, have either all or virtually all their state where you don't have to have a permit to be able to carry. So it's something above that. But, you know, you go to a lot of places, you know, Pennsylvania has like, what, 12-13% of the adult population with concealed carry permits. You know, you go to a mall, you go to a movie theater, you go to a restaurant, it's very likely that you're going to have somebody nearby you who's carrying a permanent concealed handgun. But you would never know that they're doing it unless something bad were to happen and they'd be forced to go and use it. And the same thing would be true with these teachers. You know, why would anybody even know that they're carrying in those situations?
Well, something happened just today, and Dan is showing me his phone about something that happened just now while we've been on the air, apparently. So,
hi, John. Hey, today, I'm reading this from USA Today, so I imagine that the sources are probably real. But in Dixon, Illinois today, a suspect, he opened fire on a graduation rehearsal, and he was stopped by a armed resource officer. So I don't know how big this will hit on the news, but he stopped what could have been a mass shooting.
Right. Well, there was a similar case just recently in Maryland where an armed resource officer stopped an attack, too. Both of those occurred after the Parkland shooting. And, of course, at the Parkland shooting, we all know that the attack went on for 6 minutes, and like less than a minute after the attack started, you had the deputy sheriff kind of right outside the building, not going in, but he could have gone in and obviously stopped the attack minutes earlier. I mean, he probably could have stopped it, you know, in less than 2 minutes if he had wanted to try at least.
Right. I don't understand why he didn't go in the building, but really what I don't understand is if there's people inside the building that were unknown that had firearms, legally possessed firearms, they could have stopped this way early.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, look, there's a big difference. If you're a teacher and you're in a room or a staff member and you're stuck in the room and the person's coming up to your room, you don't have much choice.
Yeah.
Either you're going to defend yourself or you're going to risk dying, too.
Right.
And it's a point where somebody has to go and enter a building or something, as this guy's case. But, you know, anyway, it seems easy. You know, I don't, it's not a puzzle to me.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And one of the things, just before we run out of time, that I wanted to, you know, pick your brain about a little bit. On your website, you've got a survey that takes place every year. It's the National Association of Chiefs of Police. And every year they ask them, you know, basically, and they ask it in different ways. And the way you ask a question, you obviously know because you're a statistician, the way you frame a question sometimes can, you know, guide the answers that you get. But they always ask something like, how do you feel about citizens carrying concealed? Do you consider them part of the solution to crime or part of the problem to crime? This year, tell us what the results showed and how the question was framed.
Well, I mean, you know, the reciprocity type of issue they've been bringing up for many years. The last two, they've asked kind of a simple version of this question. They said, does your department support nationwide recognition of state-issued concealed carry permits? And they've had about 86% of the police departments around the country that they've surveyed support that.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the last 2 years, they asked it a little bit different way. They said, well, significantly different. They said, would national recognition of state-issued concealed carry permits facilitate the violent crime-fighting efforts of professional law enforcement community? And in that case, they have maybe 63%, I guess, or 70. They had one earlier one, 70%, with slight variations on how that. And so, you know, I don't think that there was a 20 percentage point change in 1 year. In terms of, or 10 points in another time, in terms of the three different ways that they asked the question. But, you know, it's obviously pretty strong support there for the concept generally, and then maybe slightly less, but still a large majority of people when they ask kind of what will be the end result of it in terms of helping law enforcement reduce crime.
Absolutely. You know, it's so similar to me, you know, when we talk about the way that questions are asked, when people are, you know, this statistic that you hear all the time that 90% or whatever the number is of American citizens believe that we need stricter gun control laws. I believe that is completely false. I think what people are trying to express with their answers is, I want to feel safer, right? Because they don't even know what the laws are. So how do they know they want stricter laws, right? So I think that things like that happen all the time, and you're in the mire of it, so you can really speak to that better than I could.
Well, I mean, the big thing with the 90% or 80% is the survey question that asks them whether they support these universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure a lot of people understand it. I think most people just view it as a question, do you want to stop criminals from being able to go and buy guns? And the interesting thing is that Michael Bloomberg has put these proposals up on the ballot in states. In 2016, he had it on the ballot in Nevada and Maine. In Maine, despite massive spending, like 6-1 more than his opponent, the ballot initiative lost by 4 percentage points. I mean, you shouldn't have to spend 6 times more than the other side and lose if 95% or whatever of Americans support this, or 97% of Americans support it.
They just want to send the message out there that everybody agrees in every town. Yeah.
Well, they just keep on repeating it, and the media wants to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and even, you know, earlier surveys, if they asked them a specific question about a particular bill that was before Congress, like the Manchin-Toomey bill, most Americans were satisfied with it going down to defeat. So it matters a lot on how you ask the question there.
Absolutely. Well, we have got to run, but thank you so much for spending so much time with us. And as we go out, Dr. John Lott, please tell folks how they can follow all the work you do. You are a volunteer-based organization. You need donations to continue to do the work that you do. You write amazing books that people should really check out and get in their hands. So just tell folks how they can stay tapped into all that you do.
Well, people can find the Crime Prevention Research Center at our website at crimeresearch.org. Also subscribe to our website or our emails that we send out every couple of weeks, which I hope people find useful, that go through a lot of different issues. And, that's probably the best way of keeping abreast of the information, subscribing to our website. And there's a link near the top of the page where they can do that, and they can also send us an email. But I appreciate you having me on.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. John Lott. We will be talking to you again soon. Bye-bye.